This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Encino Man, and there is not a sexier movie in the universe than Encino Man. Love the look that you're giving me.
Yeah. Are we talking about the same movie? Or?
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Super sexy. So, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
And hopefully Corinne didn't ruin it for you with that description, because it is not a sexy movie. Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for One Dry Kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms. Today we're doing Encino Man, which is about freelance backyard archaeology and finding out that your high school crush is much, much, much older than you think, a.k.a. a caveman love story. Ooh. Isn't that sexy, though? No. And I am here with my co-host, the pre-hiss to my toric, the meso to my zoic, the crow to my magnum friend, co-host Corinne Edding.
Aw, and I am here with the Dave to my stony.
Ooh,
Miss Tamara Coney.
You so hard for that. Did you just call me Dave, bitch? You just called me Dave.
That's what you get for calling me fucking Whiplock last week.
Whiplock was at least a little bit adorable. Dave was just reprehensible. Who's a person in this movie? In case you're like, who the fuck is Dave and what did he do to you guys?
Oh, Dave hurt my soul watching this movie is what Dave does. You know who I thought was going to hurt my soul watching this movie? Pauly Shore, who plays a character named Stony. But no, it was not Pauly Shore who hurt my soul. Mm-hmm. It was fucking Dave. Fucking Dave.
Dave and Encino Man. And this was my week's pick, and I apologize in advance because I said it a couple of times. Encino Man is the one movie I watched twice in a row with my friend Dana. Were we high? No. We were just, really enamored with Brendan Fraser because we watched it, rewound it, and watched it again. So I'm like, oh, I haven't seen it since then. I must have liked it enough to watch it twice. So I did it on this here podcast, and I am so sorry about that.
It fits well with our theme in the month of May. We're doing movies that may make you go, what the fuck?
Seriously. But then I realized that the charm and things that endeared me to this movie were Brendan Fraser's expressions and nuances and all the little things that he did that you can't really write into an outline for a podcast.
He does have a very sweet, soft, soulful gaze. And, you know, honestly, I felt like there were some real comparisons between this and Earth Girls Are Easy.
Really?
And I felt like that he had like the soul of a Zeebo, you know?
Yes, a Zeebo soul. One week we're in space. The next week we're digging up a backyard for a prehistoric man that we may or may not fall in love with. Aren't you glad you're here?
All of these men need to be shaved. All of them need to learn the English language. I mean, there's just, you know.
I don't know. Brendan Fraser was pretty hairless. He was didn't have a lot going on in the fuzz department.
Well, he shaved his face.
And, patchy at best.
And then he was, his hair was very spectacular.
Yes. Yeah, I'll give you that. I just might like full body hair, like Earth Girls Are Easy alien style, which he was not.
No.
Do you have a siren going on by your house?
I do.
Dang, I could hear that.
I know, they're coming to get me. I'm too sexy. I'm going to be arrested for being too sexy.
That song was also in this movie. Wow, what a callback.
I'm too sexy for this podcast. Too sexy for this podcast.
What are you trying to say about me, Corinne? I'm sexy too, goddammit. I'm sexy too.
We're too sexy for this podcast. Well, somebody's got to hold down the fort.
We're not too sexy for the podcast. We're sexy enough for the podcast. Can you work that into the rhythm? We're sexy enough for this podcast. No. My singing stylings are off today. We may have to stop and record some other time.
Yeah. Okay. Bye, gentle listeners. We're coming back next week.
Well, they don't have to know that. Through the powers of editing, I'm going to have to go spend a good two and a half hours at the karaoke bar.
Okay.
Center myself in my song stylings and come back. I know you know nothing about that, Corinne, because it comes so naturally to you.
I'm just excited that you're going to get all Joni Mitchell on me. And then, no. You need to be more diva style. I'm thinking, what's her fucking name from Fleetwood Mac?
Stevie Nicks?
Yes, Stevie Nicks.
God, I would take Stevie Nicks all day over Joni Mitchell.
I know. I was going the wrong direction. I completely agree. Joni Mitchell is way too folky. She's not.
Yeah.
Stevie Nicks has like the glam, the sexy, but also it's like boho. And that's totally you, you know, glam, sexy, boho.
And I have the raspiness in my voice, the echoes of, you know, cocaine usage, even though that wasn't me. Like, I could call it out in myself, though. The drug usage. I can internalize the drug use and bring it out in my voice. Well, Corinne.
Yes?
Did you by chance remember to do a synopsis this week?
Okay, I literally set an alarm on my phone to remind me to do the synopsis.
And?
Thanks to that, I did 95% of the synopsis.
Are you going to ad-lib the last 5%?
Yes.
All right. We'll see if we can figure out which part that is.
Are you ready for me to get into it?
Please do. All 95% of it.
Dave. Okay. There you go.
Dave. Your synopsis is just Dave. You know what you did, Dave. That's all I got to say.
Fucking Dave. Okay. No. Synopsis. Encino Man. Dave, played by Sean Astin, just has 2 goals this year, his senior year of high school. 1, to get the girl Robin, who got away because they could have been something back in their middle school days.
Mm.
I know. So sad. Let it slip through his fingers. 2, he also wants to become wildly popular. These 2 goals will simultaneously be achieved. They will come together just as soon as he births out and finishes the pool that he is digging out in his backyard.
Oh, the pool.
Yes.
That is a character all in itself.
It is a kind of a character all in itself, actually. An odd one at that. But he obviously watched Field of Dreams and learned, if you build it, they will come. I will say no. If you build it, it doesn't always come.
Yeah.
All is going according to plan until an earthquake unearths a caveman frozen in a block of ice. And don't you science nerds question this whole caveman being in a block of ice in the middle of very warm Southern California in the bottom of a swimming pool. Gentle listeners, 100% of scientists agree that this could totally happen. Anyhow, Dave quickly pivots, thinking finding a caveman will catapult him to popularity. And with his trusty best friend Stoney, played by Pauly Shore, by his side, now we've reached the 5%.
Wow, I'm surprised the other part of it was so well rehearsed.
Look, I wrote this when I was in line in the Chipotle. The alarm went off on my phone, and then I had to give them my order, and I didn't have time because I then had to go to the cat house, feed the cats, eat a little bit of food, come back over here, have technical difficulties, and finally get with the program. So
that explains everything why I say science nerds guacamole.
You know, that's science nerds salsa fresca to you, okay?
Sorry.
So, with his trusty best friend Stoney, played by Pauly Shore, by his side, will these 2, quote, teenage boys, because Pauly Shore looks like anything but a high schooler, rule the school with caveman cool? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
I think we also should probably take a little time to explain Pauly Shore to gentle listeners who may not be familiar with him. He was a character that was around in the late 80s, early 90s.
MTV VJ.
And he was known for howling.
Oh!
What's up, Krusty? This is Pauly Shore, your weasel. Like, he had this whole persona.
Yeah.
That he fully injects into this movie.
Yes.
So it's his character, and he is playing himself in this movie as Pauly Shore, this hippie, pixie fairy, sparkle sunshine, drugged up. Hard to describe him all in a bunch of words, apparently. But so that's who he's playing in this movie.
And he had a moment of wild popularity and had a series mm-hmm. of about 3 to 4 movies where he was the star.
Before people got tired of him.
Yes. And I think that this movie sort of catapulted him into that region. I'm not sure if it was what catapulted him into it, but I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah. All in all, he was a character, and he's a hippy dippy stony type guy that talks funny, but that's his shtick.
Yes.
And his shtick is weaved all throughout this movie.
Yes,
so if you're like, what the fuck is this guy on? That's Pauly Shore, the weasel.
So, Miss Tamara, are you ready to get us started on this Ice Age journey that is Encino Man?
It sure I am. We're back in L.A. again. <It's> like, all the crazy shit seems to happen in L.A., go figure.
All the movies that make you go, what the fuck? L.A. Yes.
L.A. It's fitting. It's fair. Very fair. We see a barren landscape. It's Encino, which is a city in the San Fernando Valley, a.k.a. Los Angeles, a.k.a. home of the Easy Earth Girls, a la Earth Girls Are Easy, that we did last week. It's not the Encino we know today. This Encino is the rugged wilderness that covered the San Fernando Valley thousands of years ago. A caveman clad in furs crawls up the side of a rocky cliff to his cave, where his mate is shivering and attempting to grind food in a prehistoric bowl.
Is she grinding food in a prehistoric bowl in a cave?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. She's in a cave. Inside the cave is the cave woman. In the cave woman's hand is a prehistoric bowl that she is grinding food inside.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
It's inside and the inside and the inside. The Russian doll of prehistoric times.
You know, I'm pretty sure that bowl is called a Mysterian bowl, just in case you were wondering. No,
again. Oh, stop trying to steal Pauly Shore's thunder in 3 or 4 scenes from now, Corinne. Anyways, this cave woman is freezing. It seems as if the Ice Age is descending upon them. It's really hard to get the like heaviness of this scene with you laughing, Corinne. They're freezing inside.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Got it out of your system. You good? You good.
I'm so good. Okay.
The caveman takes off one of his many furs and wraps it around her shoulders. She looks on as he tries starting a fire, but he's not having any luck. And suddenly, the ground starts rumbling. The caveman stands and starts screaming at the shaking earth, but it only rumbles louder, nearly knocking him off his feet.
You sound like a growling dog.
I appreciate your earthquake is so hard to concentrate with you going.
I'm just trying to support you.
Thank you for the sound effects. Now quit it. Okay. So sad. This is such a sad time. I'm crying. It's so sad. Not at all because you're growling like a dog trying to emulate an earthquake. The earth shakes and rumbles louder, nearly knocking him off his feet. He tries reaching for his mate's hand, but is unable to grasp it before a wall of ice and snow overtakes him. And we cut to Encino of today, or at least the early 90s version of Encino. And once again, the ground is shaking. Just your typical California earthquake, but this time, instead of burying a Cro-Magnon man in ice, it's shaking Dave Morgan, played by young Sean Astin, out of sleep.
Did he feel the earth move under his feet? Was the sky tumbling down?
No, but he did get drenched by a Slurpee that was above his bed, so there was that.
A completely thawed Slurpee.
Yes, 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 yes. Much like Encino Man later in the movie. Anywho, Dave says groggily, I hate those things. Go ahead, Corinne. It's your turn. It's your section.
I'm ready. I was born ready. So ready. I'm not in the section of the script where it says what that bowl is called. No, not at all. Dave is on an early morning mission. My early morning missions, personally, are going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a different kind of early morning mission. He is a high school senior shoveling a huge hole in his backyard, and there is dirt everywhere. That's a shoveling sound. Shoveling is like...
I'm still trying to do the earthquake. It's an aftershock, perhaps, because the earthquake was earlier.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. That's the backyard earthquake noise. Okay. See, you are doing the prehistoric earthquake noise. Mine is the Encino 1990s backyard earthquake noise. So it's a little bit different than yours.
It's a modern earthquake noise because earthquake noises have changed.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the acoustics.
Right.
It's technology.
Yes, absolutely. So why is he digging a fucking pool in his backyard before school? Because he is manifesting the pool of his dreams by digging it into reality. Mm. He hears, coming from inside his house, followed by Dave's mom saying, "Stanley, bring that back here." But Stanley, a.k.a. Stoney, snaked the last bagel, and he's not giving it back. Stanley looks like the 90s had a baby with a hippie. Bell-bottom jeans with alternating acid wash and light blue thick vertical stripes, a mesh red shirt with a white undershirt underneath it, and a jean button-down collared shirt over it that has some nice decorative stitching on the top part of it. And he's wearing a scarf wrapped around his very curly hair, covering his forehead and leaving the side sashing to flutter in the breeze.
Hot.
Yeah. Did I do a good job of describing Stoney's unique stylings? Yeah.
That's because I wanted people to know, like, what a unique character he was, but I was too lazy to do it myself, so I'm all here, Corinne. You described it.
Oh.
Thank God it was your section.
100%, because I've done that to you plenty of times.
Yes. Quid pro quo.
He comes to the edge of the pool, a.k.a. giant dirt ditch, just in time for Dave to shovel a pile of dirt on him and his bagel. And yet Stoney doesn't care. Dirt just gives it vitamins and munches away on the bagel. Dave hands him a shovel to help dig, but Stoney declines, saying... Okay, gentle listeners, this is the first time I've ever seen this movie, aside from like some tiny little clips, but that's been it. So never watched this movie. So Stoney declined, saying, "Sorry, Dave, I came to munch." And with that remark, I actually think that Stoney may be the smartest person in the movie. So this is what I say, not having watched anything but the first 5 minutes of the movie. Yes.
Got it. Okay. So you changed your opinion, I'm guessing, later on down the line?
No, actually.
Oh, okay.
I stand for Stoney, man. I think he's the hidden treasure of this movie. He's fantastic. Dave's little sister, who's about 11 and reminds me a lot of the little brother in Teen Witch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Inexplicably comes out and berates her brother about what a big loser he is and how he's not going to the prom and no one is going to swim in his stupid pool before disappearing back into the house. And I think no one's going to swim in his stupid pool because it's just dirt.
It's not lined. It's not the beautiful blue pools that you see in your friends' backyards.
Nope.
It is a big hole in the ground.
It's not even an above ground like pool that you can just like hang out and frolic in. No, it's just a giant dirt hole.
Yes, because if it was an above the ground pool, I'd be like, why is he digging for an above the ground pool? That makes no sense.
So that he can put the above ground pool in the ground so it looks like a non-above ground pool.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Stoney tells his friend, "Dave, stop stressing. High school's almost over and we're losers. Embrace it." But Dave will not embrace it. He says ardently, "I don't want to be a loser. I want to be known as the high school senior who started off slow and finished strong. I want my own page in the yearbook. I want to be a legend." That's me doing amazing electric guitar riffing, a la Bill and Ted. Mm. Yeah. Stoney encourages his friend in Enjoy the last few weeks of school, bruh, because we'll both be on to bigger and better things. Come on. You survived school without tweaking your melon. And here we have an epic stony translation moment. Tamara, please break out your stony dictionary and explain what the following line means.
Mm-hmm.
Life's about greasing the dew back, buddy, and wheezing on the buff fest.
Well, the whole sentence is, you survived without tweaking your melon, which means that he actually got through school and did well without, like, killing himself. Life's about greasing the dew back, which is just enjoying yourself and being yourself. Like, you know, you're putting your hair back because how you like it.
Oh, the dew. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I got it.
And wheezing the buffies is checking out the ladies. So life's about being yourself, doing what you want, being your own unique version of who you love, and finding somebody who loves you too for that.
Mm-hmm. Wisdom of the ages. Thank you, Stony. But Dave ignores Stony's inspirational words. He holds out hope for last minute instant popularity. Stony can read between the lines and says, bro, Robin Sweeney is not going to prom with you. She thinks you're crusty. But Dave won't hear it and argues, Robin is mine. She's become a major babe and she loves me. But does she though? But does she? But does she?
My dad used to get paid in weird, wonderful things. Sometimes when he did jobs for people, that weren't money.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that he got was a camper shell for a truck that did not fit on his truck. So he just put it in the backyard.
I remember that.
Yes. A freestanding camper that we used as a clubhouse, which I loved. Hence probably where my need and desire to have my own house stemmed from, because that was my clubhouse. And I decorated and cleaned the shit out of it up to the point where I even put a pool next to my clubhouse.
Ooh.
Much like Dave, except I was smart because I dug a hole, which was a little bit longer than my body, so I could just like lay in the water. So basically like a grave site size hole, like I was gonna murder somebody. But instead of just letting it lie with just the dirt in it, I got inflatable pool lounge floaties. So the big long ones that you could lay on in pools. We had a couple of those in the garage. So I took them, they were deflated, and I put them in the hole like a lining. So I lined my little hole with blue plastic, and then I put boards around it as like my little patio. So I had a lovely little tomb-sized pool. It was wonderful.
So what you're saying that is, as a 10-year-old, you had better strategic pool side thinking than fucking Dave as a high school senior did.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And back to the movie.
Yes.
We cut to Dave catching a ride on the back of Stoney's scooter to school while Stoney happily sings, I'm a stony, crusty dude with the mop on top. They drive right onto the quad and Dave sees his love, Robin, hanging out with the cool crowd. Stoney howls, "Ooh!" at her. And she smiles at the two as they pass by. They park, and Stony again encourages his friend to forget about Robin because she always shines him. Dave argues, you don't understand. We have history. Stony reminds him, you had history, dude. But that was pre-freshman history. You could have had her back then. Dave sighs, but she hadn't hit babehood yet. Ew.
Seriously, though, what the fuck?
Did I say this was a rom-com? I am so sorry. I was so wrong, because he's just objectifying her and be like, I didn't like her back then because she wasn't pretty yet. And now that she's pretty, I want her, and she doesn't want to have anything to do with me. Why? Oh, I don't know, Dave, because you're a chode.
Serious chode.
He sees Robin's beau, Matt, played by Michael DeLuise, pick her up like Simba in the opening of Lion King. But sexier. And Dave wonders aloud, Matt Wilson, what does she see in him? Stony answers, he's got the buff spikes chilling on the top of his melon. He's got the serious beak and his own personal holding company full of fundage that he wheezes off of major. Which means that he's pretty good looking and he's rich.
Thank you.
And, Stony adds, he has 18-inch biceps and mine are only 4, so he's also buff. The bell rings and we see all of our players that have history class together. sitting as they listen to the teacher give a lecture about Cro-Magnon men and glaciers. The teacher announces to the class, "As a matter of fact, some scientists believe that there are still underground glacier movements in this part of the world." Dave steals glances at Robin, who's across the class, until Big Buff Matt notices, stands in front of her, and shakes his head menacingly at him. Dave puts his attention back on the teacher, who reminds his student that this whole area was covered in ice thousands of years ago, and pulls down a screen which has an illustration of a Cro-Magnon man, who is a rustic fur-clad piece of beefcake. Ella, Robin's friend, calls out, "He looks pretty dope. I'd go out with him." And the teacher strides over and says, "Oh, no, 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 Elle. Although he looks like you and me, he was very savage and took anything he wanted, including his women." Elle smiles mischievously and says, "That's barbaric." But you could tell she's into it.
After school, Dave resumes his pool digging while Stony vibes on music nearby. I don't know what he's listening to. I didn't realize he was vibing on music nearby. Anyways, Dave's shovel hits something hard. Initially, it looks like a rock, but when he bends down to pick it up, he realizes it's cold. Maybe it's cold as ice.
Oh, God. We're weaving in all the songs this episode, but on Corinne's side, because my song stylings are off.
I love your off song stylings. I think they're the best.
No.
He drags Stony with him to the pool depths to investigate. And when they pull the object from the ground, they realize it's a prehistoric looking bowl. Stony grabs it and deduces, "It looks like a Mysterian bowl from the Mysterian era."
Why does that sound familiar?
Oh, it's because I had this knowledge that I just dropped on you because you didn't really know.
Right. I didn't write that 2 days ago in this very outline that you have in front of you.
Okay. No. Stony carries it out of the pool to get a better look at it while informing Dave, "This is like prehistoric Tupperware." Just then, the ground starts shaking again. It's an aftershock, and Stony loses his balance and flings the bowl in the air behind him. It soars through the air, flipping through the air, and Dave uses his lightning-quick reflexes, catapults himself off a wheelbarrow and into the air to catch it mid-air before slamming onto the pool bottom.
Did I use air a lot in that section, or did you?
I don't know. I just decided to add into it just because.
To give it a playful air.
Ooh! Zing! Yes! And we use the term pool bottom loosely because it's just dirt.
It's the bottom of the hole.
Yes. Dave lands right on top of another stone which was uncovered by the earth shaking. It's also cold as ice. As a matter of fact, it looks like ice. Dave takes a closer look at it and cries, "Stony, there's a guy buried at the bottom of my pool." They scream and they go, "Ah!" and rush over to the kitchen window where Dave's mom is. And they're like, "There's a guy in the pool!" They pound on the glass, but she's on the phone working. So she ignores them and closes the blind in their face. And I don't blame her. like, your idiot son is trying to dig for Jesus in the backyard, and his stony bestie is hanging out there. No. Who knows what, like, are they dropping acid? Have they gotten too high? We do not know. We don't want to know. Don't ask, don't tell. But Tamara points out. What do you point out?
Do the pair go inside using the back door that's just a few short feet away? No. No, they don't.
They decide that since Mom ignored them, that they have to take matters into their own hands. They peer over the pool edge at the body encased in ice and speculate. Stony says, "They never found Jim Morrison." And Tamara says,
"Yes, they did."
"However, I, Corinne, the other half of this podcast, thank you very much," just in case you were wondering, postulates that Stony still holds out hope that Jim Morrison is still alive, as there's a theory that he faked his death, and due to the fact that an autopsy wasn't performed on the alleged Jim Morrison, the rumors persist. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I didn't go down a little research hole for this at all. No. Encino Man? Yes, I actually looked up a couple of different things in this movie.
Wow, shocking.
Corinne doing the deep dive, important research for the think piece that is Encino Man.
Okay. Now, I think that's stretching out a wee bit.
Dave adds, or Jimmy Hoffa also wasn't found. Stoney finishes, or Jim Mahoney. Dave looks at him questioningly, and Stoney explains, he was a kid that I knew in Cub Scouts. And I personally think that Dave knows exactly who Jim Mahoney is, and Dave was involved in his disappearance because I think Dave is in his early serial killer days.
Wow.
That's just my hypothesis so far.
He's not digging a hole. He's digging a hole for all the bodies.
Exactly. Hmm. And it all comes back around, you'll find out, like, towards the end of the script. But they cautiously slide down the empty poolside, and Stoney, looking at the layers of the dirt that they're sitting in, cries, oh my God, I know what this is. It's a caveman. At first, Dave is dubious, but then he remembers what the teacher said earlier in class.
Boy, it's a good thing that they had that lesson today, huh, Corinne?
Why, yes, what a coincidence. However, could they have known that the same day they were learning about Cro-Magnon Man, that they would actually have a Cro-Magnon Man revealed to them while they look at the different strata of the Earth that totally is scientifically possible for a high school boy who's digging a pool to really dig that deep? Absolutely.
Boy, I bet that teacher has egg all over his face when he didn't think that there was underground glaciers in this part of the world, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Because obviously there are secrets in the ice under all of our soils, if you know what I mean.
No.
Dave gawks at the hunk of ice poking up through the ground and says, a caveman, do you know what this could mean for us? Money, fame, popularity. The Inquirer is going to be all over this. Mm-hmm. Stoney eyes his friend and says, I'm already popular. Dave retorts, oh yeah, you travel in a pack of one. Actually, he travels in a pack of two because of you, Dave, who he drags along with him everywhere out of the kindness of his heart. You need to be very thankful for Stoney, Dave. Hmm. He is the light in your life. But after some urging about getting all the fundage their heart can desire, Stoney agrees to help Dave dig the slab out.
The friends fashion a levee system and use a riding mower to hoist the hunk of ice out of the pool and into the tool shed, with nary a parent to be seen, even though they're doing this all well into the night.
And I would put good money that Stoney was actually the person who created that pulley system.
Oh, interesting hypothesis. Mm-hmm. They surround the frozen caveman with space heaters, and Dave swears Stoney to secrecy. They can't tell anyone! Cut to the next day at school, Dave beelines through the hall straight to Robin, who's standing at her locker with her friend Elle. He whispers to her conspiratorially, hey, Robin, Robin, guess what I found? Elle snarkily says, a life? Dave pulls Robin away so he can spill the beans alone before divulging, I found a caveman in my backyard when I was digging my pool. Robin scoffs, but he assures her, I'm serious, really. I'm only inviting a few choice people over to see it. Robin pats his chest and says dismissively, Dave, I don't think I can handle a caveman right now.
Uh-huh.
And walks away.
There goes his plan for instant popularity.
Oh, but the movie's just begun, Corinne. It's just begun. Dave is disappointed but doesn't have time to wallow because big boyfriend Matt saw the whole exchange and comes over with the warning. Matt asks, hey, you going somewhere? And Dave says, yeah, I got a date with your mom.
Ooh, noted.
Matt puts him in a friendly little headlock, and then he and his lackeys wait until the second bell rings when the halls empty out, and they staple Dave to the wall. While he's suspended, Matt warns him, I know all of your stupid plans about being prom king, but that's not going to happen. And Robin, she wouldn't piss on you if your gums were on fire.
Oof.
Dave's face falls and he argues, yes, she would. Matt says, shush, because that's his stupid tag line in this stupid movie. Shush.
When in doubt, say shush.
No, you have to say it with more emphasis.
Shush. Shush.
Well, that last one was interesting.
Thank you.
No problem.
Or, you know, if Stoney was to say it, he'd say, shush.
After Matt shushes him, he takes a Sharpie and writes, "Eat me," across Dave's forehead and pulls fire alarm so the entire student body sees him and laughs as they make their way outside.
Meanwhile, back at the house, the caveman, played by Brendan Fraser, has finally thawed out. He breaks through the ice encasing and is confused by his surroundings. He makes his way out of the tool shed. He's covered in muddy clay and a loincloth. Definitely a loincloth.
And not much else.
No. He befriends the family dog, then makes his way to the highest peak, which is currently the mound of future swimming pool dirt that Dave piled up. Cavey, that is the name that Tamara generously blessed him with, and it is my favorite name for him, honestly.
I got sick and tired of saying the caveman, the prehistoric man, the previously encased in ice man.
I love Cavey. Cavey's great. I'm here for it. I wish that they had decided to call him Cavey in the movie. He surveys the suburban Encino neighborhood curiously until a helicopter flies overhead. He's terrified and takes a nearby shovel and wields it at the flying creature while screaming, "Ah!" Some people fight and some people flight. Well, Cavey does both. He runs out into the front yard and goes from one danger to another. He's confronted by a garbage truck and fends it off with his shovel, much like Val's Dr. Love fiancé tries to fend off an alien ship with a pool skimmer. That having been said, an active garbage truck is much more terrifying than an inert potential alien ship. Just saying.
All kinds of callbacks in this episode.
Mm-hmm. KB retreats after the garbage truck honks at him and takes shelter inside Dave's house because this modern-day cave has to be safer than the mean streets of Encino. Once inside, caveman tentatively walks around. He's alone and everything is quiet until he accidentally steps on a TV remote control. The television roars to life. It's The Terminator, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, right at the point where he says, "I'll be back." This causes him to jump and the station switches to a music video. He likes the heavy metal music and attempts to do a little headbanging, but he's not quite thought out enough and gets brain freeze. Then the channel switches to another music video and the caveman sees a Maori dancer with his face painted wearing nothing but a loincloth and Cavey's very white face under all the dirt that he has caked on him says, "My people," and he starts mimicking the Maori dance moves.
Oh, he is wearing kind of brown face in that moment, so it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, but this is like the least racist of the problematic moments in this movie, I would say.
Yeah, he's like literally covered in dirt, so he's about 6 or 7 shades darker than he normally is in real life.
Yes.
Full of clay.
But this is not a soul man, which you could also do, as in this movie will make you say, "What the fuck?"
Oh, I don't movie. Even know if I could find. I can find it on Prime, but I don't want to pay for that. A short while later, Stoney and Dave come home from school. They go straight to the tool shed, and there's nothing there but a puddle of water. Dave mistakenly thinks the caveman melted into thin air and slumps to the floor in disappointment. Stoney puts his arm around his friend and offers to buy him a ho-ho to cheer him up. He agrees, and when they exit the shed, they see brown hand smears and a face print on the sliding glass window where the caveman slammed into it. Because glass. They proceed to the living room where everything's in disarray. The rooms look ransacked, and cave-like paintings are all over the television and walls. They look to be made out of peanut butter, and the dog is enjoying them immensely. Or at least he's enjoying cleaning them up.
Okay, wait. You say peanut butter. You say peanut butter. I say shit.
Okay. If it's shit, then why is the dog sitting there licking it up?
Oh, you've never seen a dog eat shit before?
I mean, their own shit, but do they eat human shit?
Probably. If given the opportunity, they eat other dogs' shit. They eat their own shit. They eat the shit from the kitty litter box. Dogs like to eat shit.
Okay. Well, it's a bone of contention in this episode. Gentle listeners, if you want to weigh in, is it shit or is it peanut butter? OneDryKiss@gmail.com. Then the fire alarm goes off and the friends notice a smoky scent coming from the second floor. They face each other and... scream, as teens are wont to do in 90s buddies movies, and run upstairs.
I think this is the second look at each other and scream portion, and I believe there's like three or four. So plenty more where that came from.
There's a commotion coming from Dave's room, and they both cautiously open the door to see the caveman attempting to start a fire with a chair he's hacked to pieces. He's rubbing the pieces of wood together frantically. Dave slowly closes the door again, turns towards Stoney, and exclaims, "He's alive! He was practically an ice cube, and now he's alive!" Stoney nervously suggests that they just walk away, bro. But Dave disagrees. "No way! We found him! He's ours! Leave it to me. I know how to handle this."
Okay, talk about some white male manifest destiny bullshit right there.
What? He found them. He's theirs.
Uh-huh.
He was in their backyard. Therefore, he's their property.
Finders, keepers of people. Yeah, let's do that. Uh-huh. I think we already tried doing that, and we abolished it a long time ago. Yeah.
See, but he was pro-abolition, so, you know, he still can be enslaved. See, that's how it works.
Great. Great.
He predates the release of owning people, so it doesn't apply to him.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's kind of like when you have a house that has had old work done on it.
Right.
So it doesn't need to be up to modern day code because it was before the code was invented. Got it.
Grandfathered in.
Right.
Grandfathered in.
Yep. That's great. I really like the way that you think about this, Tam. It's good.
If you think I believe that, you're stupid. Anyways, back to the movie. He slowly re-enters the room, waving a pair of tidy whities as a peace flag and saying calmly, "Hi, my name's Dave. You're in Encino." The caveman is startled and scuttles into the far corner while watching them cautiously and grunting.
I'd be startled, too, if somebody was waving tidy whities at me. Those are like the grossest form of underwear on the face of the earth.
In that whole scenario, you think that's what the caveman is thinking. Oh, my God. Do you know what that does to your sperm count?
No, just like, ew. Tidy whities? No. Not cute. Not a cute look. Not sexy. No wonder you're not popular, Dave. I doubt that Stoney wears tidy whities.
I think Stoney lets his buff stuff wave in the wind.
I agree. He's free ballin', yo. Yes.
Buddy.
Exactly. Dave approaches slowly and softly says, "We go to high school." Stoney reminds him, "He doesn't know what high school is." Dave agrees. "He doesn't know what anything is. This room, a house." They seem to be making progress, though, with Cavey until the telephone rings loudly. Very fucking loudly.
Mm-hmm.
Not a cute ringtone. Scaring Cavey, who picks up his emotional support shovel and motions as if he's going to attack them. Dave, in retaliation, picks up his skateboard. And once he's armed, the caveman turns his attention back onto the phone and smashes it. He tries to flee, inadvertently landing on the bed. And then instantly, he's distracted. Because he's fascinated by its bounciness and begins jumping on it with gusto while grunting and smiling. Surprised he doesn't knock his ever-loving head on the ceiling. And good job, Brendan Fraser, for not doing that while you still managed to jump up and down on the bed. Because you are a tall-ass man and those ceilings weren't high. Then the phone's busy sound blares through the room, which sets Cavey off again. He picks up his emotional support shovel and runs at Dave again, but Stoney stops him in his tracks with a lighter. He holds a lit Bic in front of Cavey's face, saying, "Look, fire." Cavey is mesmerized by the flame and grabs it. It quickly extinguishes, and Stoney and Dave show him how to flick the Bic on, which seems ill-advised, as I think he'll probably set fire to everything. KB is totally into it and grabs the lighter and does try to ignite the pile of wood that he's collected. Dave rushes over and tells him sternly, "No!" KB looks at him and repeats, "No!" I don't know if you have a better vision of what that is.
No.
What?
No.
Okay, great.
No.
Thank you. This delights the pair, and the caveman, sensing it, jumps back onto the bed and bounces up and down while saying, "No, no, no." Stoney admires Cavey's uninhibitedness and says, "Cool, buddy. He's so greasy." I don't know what that means, but you know, what's so greasy?
I think that's Stoney's word for cool.
Oh, okay. Great.
Like he greases through life. Everything's, not everything's easy for him, but I think it's like he's cool. Like okay. That's Stoney's cool word.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate you being a Stoney whisperer.
Mm-hmm.
Dave agrees, but adds, he's a prehistoric pyromaniac. We're going to have to teach him stuff. Stoney states confidently, we'll teach him how to wheeze. You know what wheezing is?
No.
Okay.
That I don't know. I know how to wheeze the juice, but I don't know what wheeze is by itself without any context.
Okay. Thank you. Dave argues, no, we'll have to teach him to be normal or else the scientists will come take him away and cut him into hundreds of pieces and we'll still be geeks. Oh, like, okay, Dave. You mean the scientists will take him away before you get to use him for your own personal ploy at popularity? Dave, you're such a giver. Way to think about things.
Yeah, he's going to use him until the scientists come take him away and use him for their own purposes. See?
Uh-huh.
Then everybody wins.
It's like reusing. There's closing the loop. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Right.
It's the reuse. Yes. Stoney shakes his head. I'm not a geek. I'm just underrated because I'm in Encino. And besides, normal is boring. We are going psycho with him, bro. And I was like, yeah, see, Stoney is the hero of this fucking movie. Because he's like, dude, you care about high school? You know what? The world is so much bigger than high school. This is just shit. And things are going to be better once we get out of here. Your life is just encircling around this one small area. And I know that actually people just here can't appreciate me because I'm different and I'm awesome. And I just need to go out into that big, bad world. And I'm like, yes, motherfucker, Stoney, you know, you are awesome. Stoney has the wisdom of the ages. Stoney is my guru. Stoney and Dave may not agree on how to make over Mr. Caveman, but they both agree he needs a bath. Stat! We get a montage of Dave and Stoney cleaning up their new possession, according to Dave, or friend, according to Stoney. It's kind of unclear. Well, right said Fred's, I'm too sexy for this hot tub, too sexy for this hot tub. So sexy plays in the background, which that song was so popular. That song had its moment.
And it was in lots of movies.
Yeah. They put him in a jacuzzi tub and have to refill it with fresh water 7 or 8 times. At first, they lather him up with soap. But when that doesn't do the trick, then they add shampoo and mouthwash and household cleansers. Anything they find under the sink. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad he's got tough caveman skin, but no. The caveman seems to enjoy the warm water and bubbles and just lets the pair have their way with him. But not in a weird way. It wasn't sexy, not in a sexy way. However, no. I'm very glad that Tamara explains the next portion where KV is eating something, and I was like, what the fuck is he eating? But Tamara knows, because she's got the wisdom of the ages.
Thank you. I feel like I got an introduction before I do a speech. And thank you, Corinne, for bringing me on here. After a thorough soak in the tub, they give KV a shave while he chugs aftershave and immediately regrets it. Then they give him a haircut while he eats bath oil balls, which he finds much more palatable.
That's what I didn't know what the fuck he was eating. Yes.
Yeah. Bath oil balls. KB is like a buff 20-something-year-old toddler that will wreak havoc and eat everything if not supervised. At least that's the vibes he's giving off right now.
And I say, almost like the aliens from Earth Girls Are Easy, the parallels are uncanny.
I was going to say, except he's not a horn dog. Oh, but he is. Yes. We just haven't got there yet.
Yes.
And the guys finally finish, applaud themselves and their makeover, and they place their caveman friend in front of the mirror so he can get a gander at his new look.
Ooh.
He's clean, he's clothed, and he has a haircut like Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons.
Yay.
He is wearing a white t-shirt with a crocheted colorful vest. He's got a prehistoric necklace that I think came with him
yes.
in the ice. And he's wearing board shorts and Converse with chunky, colorful socks. So that's how they went wild with him. He's got a whole bunch of mad flavor all his own.
He definitely looks like he stepped out of Clueless.
Yes, I would say, yeah, definitely a Clueless outfit.
That time period was like all about layering clothes.
And bright colors.
Yeah, you've got some clothes on. How about adding more clothes on top of that? And then adding some more clothes on top of that. One pair of shorts, why not add two?
Those chunky socks need about three or four layers onto them. That's yes. How leg warmers were invented. Leg warmers and shoulder pads were the aftermath of all the layering and chunkiness. They just finally condensed everything and put it all in one. Mm-hmm. Nope, you don't need seven pairs of socks. You have leg warmers. Nope, you don't need three sweaters, two t-shirts, and a emotional support camisole. We're just going to give you shoulder pads. All in one.
I actually think that the shoulder pads and the leg warmers came first. So it was just like the inverse of that. The shoulder pads made love to the leg warmers, and they had a baby of layers and layers and layers.
I think shoulder pads came first, but I think the leg warmers and the chunky socks kind of coincided in the same universe. So we'll never know. We'll never know.
Gentle listeners, we'll be taking a quick break while Tamara and I have a wrestling fight over this one issue. We'll be back shortly.
No, it's okay. You could be right. I don't want to fight. Anyways, back to the movie. KB is also very taken by his reflection in the mirror, but not in a good way. He screams and slaps the glass. Stoney, in an effort to soothe him, says, "What, dude? You should be with your mug, bro. You look buff." Link eyes him curiously, and Stoney asks, "Can you say buff?" KB mimics him perfectly. Buff? The guys laugh elated, and the caveman smiles back at them. Dave, realizing that he needs a name, proposes that they call him Link, as in the missing Link. Stoney vetoes this encounter. "I thought we could call him Stoney number two, since he's from the Stone Age." But Dave still likes Link, and Stoney relents when Dave allows him to call their previously frozen friend Linkage.
And before he suggested Stoney two, he originally suggested the name Axel, which is my second favorite of the names that have been proposed for him. Number one, KV, absolutely.
Thank you.
Number two, Axel, which got ditched. And then we end up with Link. So I guess he's going to go after Zelda. I don't know. Like, okay, whatever.
No, because he's a missing Link.
Uh-huh.
Missing Link. Then they try to deduce how smart Link is. They sit him down on the bed, and Dave places his hands on Link's chest, saying, "Link." Then he points to himself and says, "Dave." But poor Link doesn't get the game when tested. He calls himself Dave, mimicking the same hand movements, and calls Dave Link. He seems disappointed and frustrated that he can't get the correct responses, but they don't have time to fix it because Dave's parents are home. Oh no! Dave shoves a sweater over Link's arm and tells Stoney, "Take him outside and wait a minute before ringing the doorbell." Then he races to the kitchen and tries doing triage on Link's mess when Mom walks in. He doesn't get very far and instead tries to convince her and his father and his bratty little sister, who also just arrived, that he was just trying to cook dinner as a surprise. So you said that his bratty little sister is like the bratty little brother in Teen Witch, but I disagree because I think this whole movie could have gone without the bratty little sister.
The whole movie could have gone without the bratty little brother, too.
Could it?
The only thing that the bratty little brother does that kind of moves the plot forward is he steals a page from her journal and reads it aloud and shoves a cupcake. It has cupcakey hands or something. And then she grabs it and sticks it in a folder. But that could have been done a different way quite easily. However, he plays off things saying, "Oh, it's trying to cook you dinner. Flour, where's the flour?" And I'm just like, does that explain the rest of the house and how it's completely destroyed and has like shit paintings all over the walls and everything?
Peanut butter. His parents are remarkably understanding for their absentee to the next level.
Yeah, I think that his parents have been put on mood altering drugs. And they've been overprescribed and they're just completely checked out. Mm. And we'll find out a bit more about the parents I think the last time we see them in this entire movie. So they sit at the island trying to absorb the chaos when the doorbell rings frantically. Ding, 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 dong, ding, dong. Dad opens the back door. So it's the sliding. I don't know why the back sliding glass door has a doorbell, but whatever. He says, "Hello, Stanley. Who's this strange boy and why is he ringing my doorbell?" Link seems fascinated by the noise-making button and stabs it repeatedly. Dave rushes over crying, "Link, come over and meet your new family." And Stoney explains that the doorbell was stuck. Good excuse, Stoney. Dave ushers his friends inside while his parents question, "New family?" Dave's hateful little sister balks. "You gotta be kidding." Dave ignores her and fully gaslights his parents, saying smoothly, "It's Link. Linkovich Chomovsky, our foreign exchange student. Remember I asked you about this months ago. I get extra credit for college if we agree to host a foreign exchange student and learn about their culture and junk." Boris, the family dog, bounds in happily, barking and jumping all over Link. Link barks back and playfully chases the dog around the dining room and outside. Dave shuts the door after them as his father says, "Now that you mention it, I do remember you saying something." Mom stares in disbelief. "How could I forget something like this? I really don't remember you mentioning anything like that." Dave doubles down, realizing his farce is working, and asks, "How could you forget me in the third grade, Mom? I spent the whole night after the play in the parking lot, and then there was that time at soccer practice."
Absentee.
It's delicious.
Absentee, not have some tea. I guess it goes hand in hand. But his mom forgot him not once, but twice.
It's very my dad vibes. I was used to my dad not showing up. And this was before cell phones or anything like that. And I would just, you know, I'd have my book with me and I would just hang out and let time go and just read. And eventually somebody will come.
Wow, that explains so much.
Mom's face falls and Dad looks outside and asks, "Why is he attacking our dog?" They see Link with Boris slung around his shoulders, happily spinning him around.
Boris is a dog.
Boris is a dog. And there is nothing that can be construed as harmful happening to this dog in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Their interaction is a little odd, sure, but it doesn't look aggressive at all. Dave insists, "They're bonding. It's all too much." And Papa Morgan rages a little before admitting, "I'm hungry and tired." And once he confirms that Stanley, a.k.a. Stoney, is staying for dinner, he throws up his arms and says, "Well, we're feeding half the neighborhood. Why not one more?" Link comes back to the door and rings the doorbell again because the magic mm-hmm. of it all. Mm-hmm. We all need a little magic of a doorbell in our lives. Dave intercepts. It's like Halloween all over again. Dave intercepts him, slaps KV/Link's hand away, and wiggles his fingers in front of his nose, saying, "No, no." Inexplicably, Link follows the finger like a pet as he gets led into the house and mumbles an almost inaudible hello to the parents. Later that night, the boys are upstairs and Link notices a very boobalicious beer ad. He ogles it, then puts his hand out as if he wants to squeeze the model's melons. The boys helpfully tell him, "That's a Betty, and those are Gonzagas." Stoney's name for them are cones.
Cones.
Yeah. Link repeats Betty and then yawns. Dave puts his arm around him and says, "I know you've had a hard day today, but tomorrow we're going someplace really special." Stoney pops between the two and offers, "Taco Bell?" I think Taco Bell is very special, particularly the one in Pacifica. It has the best view of any eatery in Pacifica because it's oceanside. Dave shakes his head. "No, tomorrow he's going to be a high school senior." And they all pose and snap a Polaroid picture to document this special day. Because what could possibly go wrong with enrolling a caveman who has been conscious in the modern day for less than 24 hours into a high school, right?
We'll find out.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Great.
Dave is true to his word because the next morning we see the trio walking onto campus. Link once again slams into a window because he hasn't figured those out yet. Stoney does not agree with the plan, saying, "Poor Stoneager. He was stuck in a block of ice for 1 million years, and now he has to go to high school? Ugh." They lead Link to the enrollment desk, and Dave tries convincing his friend, saying, "We have a major find here. He's the ticket to fame and popularity. We just have to get him enrolled." Stoney faces his friend and says, "That's harsh." But Dave's undeterred and enthusiastically adds, "We'll make him famous. We'll teach him some stupid pet tricks and get him on Letterman."
Gross.
I mean, look at him. He's practically a monkey.
Ew. Ew.
Link has taken to the decorative wood scaffolding that separates the halls and is climbing it. Stoney argues, "You're reason off his gig. I just want to be his friend."
Yeah.
They successfully pull him off the scaffolding and manage to enroll Link. And I'd really like to see the logistics of this, but they don't show it. Mm-hmm. How to get somebody enrolled in school without any documentation, identification, or parents. Ah, the 90s.
Yes. When he says, "I mean, look at him. He's practically a monkey." And I'm like, seriously, Dave is like the villain in most movies, but I think he's supposed to be cute. Like, I think we're supposed to feel bad that this popular girl isn't into him. And I think we're supposed to root for him in his quest for, like, better for himself.
No. No. No, no, no.
He's the main character. It's ridiculous.
Quote unquote main character. You say he's the main character. I mean, he's the normal one, but I wouldn't say he's the main character. He's just the one that moves the plot along. Like, we don't have a movie if we don't have Dave.
Oh, you mean the person who moves the plot along, the person who most of the things are focused on, even though there's a caveman in the situation, but it doesn't rotate around him and his experience. No, it rotates around Dave's experience.
Yes, but I'm just saying he's not the heroine, the hero. He's the asshole because the whole movie is basically like moving against him, except for at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he's not likable. No. I agree. He doesn't say nice things. Like, who's going to side with somebody that calls this adorable caveman a monkey and he's ours and we found him and he's going to make us popular and blah, 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 blah. Like, no, he's made out to be like a douchebag. I think they made him out to be a douchebag. Not that he's the most likable one. I think the likability was pinned on Link and Stoney, and he was just the tertiary character, which I said at the top before we started, and you disagreed with me, but I stick to that sentiment.
Even though he is the focus of the entire movie and he has the most...
But he's flat. I know he's the focus, quote unquote focus, but he is bland as a bologna sandwich with no mayo. Like, Stoney and Link are the ones that have the character and the flavor. And he's just like, "I'm going to say stupid things and I'm going to be proven wrong at every single turn."
But usually that's the way those movies were, particularly that period of time. The main character is the least interesting person. It's the best friend or whatever, the sidekicks who are actually have all the personality.
Right. But this time, I think that the sidekick and the best friend get equal play time or at least equal attention as Dave.
So the friends are walking down the second floor high school hallway, going over Link's schedule, but Link is distracted by something. A smell wafts into his nose and he's on high alert. He sniffs the air and follows his nose because it always knows. He sees a brunette with her back turned to him on the floor below. He does a handstand on the stair railing, flips a somersault in the air, and lands easily on his feet onto the first floor because that's how cavemen do it. Little known fact, but gymnastics was invented by cavemen. The first Olympics was inspired by a wall of cave paintings in Encino, California, as well as other evidence that was carefully excavated from the La Brea tar pits.
That is such crock shit,
Science! It's science!
Okay. This is not a documentary, you realize that, right? This is a rom-com?
It is a rom-com. The surrounding classmates gasp at the spectacle. Link is singularly focused. His cavey tractor beam is focused on Elle, the brunette we met earlier, that I accused of betraying her friend Robin and eventually sleeping with her boyfriend, but now I may be wrong about that. Link completely invades her personal space, and he presses up against her, smelling her hair. before flipping her around, smiling like the Joker while murmuring, "Hi, hi, hi." Elle is at first annoyed until she sees Link's handsome face and smiles back at him. Dave rushes up and is at first annoyed until he sees Link's handsome face. Wait, no.
Hmm? Oh my God.
Sorry.
That movie just took a whole different turn right there.
Let's try this again, shall we? Dave rushes up and grabs Link by the ear and yanks him away. Oh, that's a totally different sentence.
Yeah.
For some reason, even though Link is a primal man, he lets little old incel Dave treat him like a punished child and just stands idly by after almost getting his ear pulled off. Dave sees Robin, who's standing next to Elle, and asks, "Did you miss me?" What the fuck, Dave? Seriously?
He's trying to be cool and suave, Corinne.
Uh-huh. Sure. Sure. And I'm like, really? That's what you're focused on right now? Boggles my mind. Link also notices Robin and fully stares at her chest before grunting, "Gonzagas," and attempts to palm her boobs. Dave and Stoney yank him away before he makes contact, while Elle, enamored, asks, "Who's this guy?" She's got hormones coursing through her body, and she is just turned on by his assertive Cro-Magnon nature.
Hmm.
Dave introduces Link as his foreign exchange student friend from Estonia. Elle is dubious. Oh, and by the way, it was Stoney that came up with him being from Estonia. Elle is dubious that they'd have a friend like Link, because Link is cool and they're not. Link is hot and they're not. Link's a hero and they're zeros. But Dave and Stoney usher him away before he sexually assaults someone else. Elle turns to Robin and gushes, "That import is mine." But is it though, Elle? But is it? And just in time for prom, is he fine or what? Robin takes a look at his Robin takes a look at his retreating figure and says, "I'm not sure." But I think she is.
The three friends go to history class where they were learning about Cro-Magnon Man, and Link, recognizing the examples of cave paintings, has taken the chalk and is covering the board in cave symbols. Dave is embarrassed and tells Link, "Sit down," but he's in the zone. Nearby, Elle and Robin are intrigued by the newcomer's uninhibitedness.
Ooh.
Matt's there, too. He eyes Link suspiciously as the girls gush about how hot their new classmate is. On the way to the next period, Link sees a couple of wannabe Beastie Boys dancing in the hallway to a loud boombox.
Link likes music. A lot.
So he joins them and starts mimicking their dance stylings until the song ends. The guys are ecstatic that their moves are so infectious and high-five Link as Dave and Stoney lead him to his next class, which is Spanish. Link learns very helpful terms such as, "The cheese is old and moldy. El queso es viejo y mojoso."
And apparently mojoso means rotting, and moldy is a different word. I just know this because I was trying to figure out what was being said at a certain point. And I was like, this is not the same word. I typed "the cheese is old and moldy" into Google Translate and it was giving me a different word. And I was confused. Yeah.
But Spanish isn't the only thing being studied in that class. Find out what exciting things happen besides old and moldy cheese after this break.
Ooh.
And we're back. Other things that are going on in this class,
yes,
are Elle's hungry eyes.
Nice.
She is sitting right next to Link and she likes the cut of his jib. Mm. She leans over and tells him, "You're cute." Link smiles and mimics back, "You're cute." Elle breathily tells him, "Meet me at Blades tonight." Link repeats, "Blades tonight." And to ensure he understands, because he's just gaping stupidly at her, she pokes Stoney and tells him, "Make sure Link makes it to Blades tonight." Stoney lights up and asks, "Can Dave and I come too, pretty please?" Elle sneers at him and says, "You smell," and then returns to her lesson. But she doesn't say no.
And also, I thought that Blades was a person. Like, you know, like either a nickname or like a last name, something like that. Because why else would you be asking? And then I find out it's a fucking ice skating rink. And I'm like, you do not need to ask for permission to come to Blades. You just go to Blades.
Oh, but Corinne, Blades is exclusive. It's only for the creme de la creme of the high school. Great. If you show up at Blades uninvited, you will just see what happens.
I showed up to a skating event invited, and yeah, I think I made it one trip around the skating rink and I just left because I was like, I'm not friends with anybody here. And though I tried it, yeah, I gotta go. So
that's a really sad story.
that's my high school life. After school, since Dave got to dictate the first part of Link's day, Stoney wants to show his new friend what's important to him. They go to a quickie mart and Stoney introduces Link to the wonderful world of snacks while saying, "Today we're going to learn about grindage, how to fill the furnace, pack the cheeks, and stuff the gills, okay?" Link picks up a banana and Stoney says, "We're going to learn about the four food groups, and that's not one of them." Stoney tosses the banana back in the basket with disdain, then leads Link down the candy aisle and picks up a pack of Milk Duds, saying, "This is the dairy group." He grabs a few tubes of sweet tarts close by and hands them to his friend, explaining, "Sweet tarts, the fruit group. These are so citrusy, it'll blow your mind." They cruise down to the end of the shelf, and Stoney picks up a bag of corn nuts and exclaims, "Vegetable group." A timer dings across the mart. Stoney stands up excitedly, calling out, "Meat group!" He leads his friend over to a microwave where he has nuked a frozen burrito. He hands Link the snack, which Link promptly takes a huge bite of. Stoney gently pries half the burrito from his hand, saying, "Hey, we gotta share 50-50, equal." Link grunts in agreement before Stoney introduces him to the last, most important group, the drink group. I'm so glad we're finally getting our dietary knowledge from a good source, Tamara. Like, I've been waiting for this moment, and I think it's just going to be the key to success for my eating for the future.
Well, they said the food pyramid that we learned on so very long ago was flawed.
Yeah.
And now we know why.
Yes. Just ask Stoney. He knows. Stoney moseys over to the icy machine and shows Link how to wheeze the juice, which is essentially putting your face underneath the icy spigot and turning it on until your face fills up with icy. Understandably, the two get kicked out of the Quickie Mart, huh, without any of their snackies, huh. Then we get a montage of Stoney and Link at Mega Mountain, an amusement park that looks suspiciously like Magic Mountain, just like it looked like Griffith Observatory at the Klub in Earth Girls Are Easy. Because it is actually Magic Mountain. They ride roller coasters, assault costume park characters, meet a bunch of Bettys, and ride the rapids with them. Link is having the time of his life. Link's having the time of his life and is learning a lot about the modern world from Stoney. Is he the best source? Well, I'll leave that up to you. Maybe not. Maybe he's not the best source, but at least he's having a good time.
Later that night, when they pull up to Dave's house riding tandem on Stoney's scooter, Dave has been waiting for hours. He yells at his friend, "Where have you been? You just took off after school? I've been so worried you can't do that." Stoney replies calmly, "God, Dave, you sound like my mom. I just took him to Mega Mountain." Dave exclaims, "Are you crazy? You took him to Mega Mountain?"
Okay, question. I got a question.
Yeah.
How is taking him to an amusement park worse than taking him to school?
Great question, Corinne. I have no idea.
I love your answer. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. I'm like, so he's not in class with you all the time? Oh, he is. No, he's not. Oh, so you're leaving him unsupervised. Gotcha. At least at Mega Mountain, he's supervised.
Yeah, so. And he's not with people who are going to be, like, trying to get him to answer questions or, you know, do other things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not,
or speak.
Yeah.
Or not use his own feces to paint cave paintings on the TV, as Corinne pointed out.
Yes, yeah. Or peanut butter. Who knows? But yes.
Stoney nods, explaining, yeah, they're riding the Viper in reverse. Dave's anger is momentarily squelched as he says, oh, really? How cool. Then Link interjects, saying, check out the nugs, wheezing the juice. Ow, buddy. Stoney joins him in a joyous howl. Ow, while Dave's face falls and he says, God, you got him talking like you now.
He does.
Yay.
Stoney and Link have dinner at the Morgans' house where Link discovers the joys of squeezable butter.
Oh, is that what that is?
Squeezable butter.
I thought it was mustard.
No.
But I was like, that mustard looks weird. That's because it's squeezable butter.
Which is not around anymore.
Yes, I was going to say, I have not lived in a universe with squeezable butter. But you know about it. I'm impressed.
See, like, these are the little things, like, he does this part, and I'm like, it was cute and it was endearing, and you can't explain it properly, and I have a whole bunch of these throughout the movie, so the movie just sounds stupid. Anyways, he slams the bottle onto the table, and when that doesn't get the butter out, he squeezes out all of the contents like a volcano while trying to catch the stream in his mouth. We also find out that Stoney doesn't have the best home life, because Papa Morgan asks, how's your mother, Stanley? And Stoney responds, she's bummed. Can you pass the peas? When Mr. Morgan looks at him suspiciously, Stanley adds, if you're edged because I'm on your grindage, just chill, because if I had my whole Brady Bunch happening at my pad, I'd go grind over there. So don't tax my kids so hardcore, Cruster. Dave's dad doesn't understand a thing he just said.
Same.
Then Link hears a fly buzzing around the table and stalks it while Stoney sings, shoo fly, don't bother me, shoo fly, don't bother me. Link catches the insect in his hand and Stoney ad-libs the last lyric, because you belong to my friend Link. Link pops the fly into his mouth and gulps loudly. Stoney happily calls out, meet group! Mr. and Mrs. Morgan are horrified, and even more so when Link ignores the lovely meal on the table and instead spies Boris munching on his kibble. Link sniffs the air and joins him, pushing the dog over and sharing his dog food, much to Dave's parents' disgust.
After dinner, the trio of friends goes to Blades, which is the ice skating rink where all the cool kids hang out.
Not anybody's house, and you don't need permission, according to Corinne.
Yes, yes. But if you do get invited to hang out with school kids where they're skating and you don't, you're still not really friends with anyone. Unless you're like really social, it may not work out so well for you. Just saying. So they are thrilled. And as they open the door to the mecca of popularity, the overhead sound system plays a Motley Crue song. The chorus wails,
oh, you're invited, but your friends can't come.
Which is really how Elle wants it to be. Link can come, but Link, your friends, they're not welcome here. Which is fitting, because as soon as Elle sees Link, she jumps into his arms squealing, I'm so glad you came! Then she notices Stoney and Dave and adds, lose the Geek Squad. They're bad for your deal. Dave spots Robin at the edge of the rink, enthusiastically waves and calls out to her, but a couple of dickheads roll a skateboard under Dave's foot, which causes him to fall down the stairs, practically tackling Robin onto the ice.
AKA you're uninvited.
Stoney chastises the punks, but they just look at each other and laugh. Meanwhile, Link has discovered the condiment bar and is using ketchup and mustard to recreate his cave drawings onto the glass partition, while Elle looks on saying, I love this piece, very avant-garde. There's a stick figure of a woman with huge tatas, and Elle asks, is that me? Link shakes his head and mumbles, Betty, Betty Nugs. Elle thinks she understands. Oh, this is your girlfriend back in Estonia. Do you miss her? He grunts a little sadly, and Elle assures him that long-distance relationships never work out, so you should sleep with me instead. Just then, Matt, who's playing hockey on the ice, slams his forearm against the glass menacingly. Link gives him side-eye, but continues undeterred. A short distance away, Dave has regained his composure and produces a photo of Robin and them as toddlers bathing.
Poor Robin.
In a tub, saying, don't forget, we've been naked together. Ew! Ew, ew, ew! Tamara says she's tickled. I actually don't think she is. I think she's uncomfortable, but...
Well, she picks it up and she laughs and she goes, nice bod, to the toddlers, which was also right. Kind of weird. And then she hides and was like, did you show this to anybody?
Yeah.
So I'm like, at first she was like, aw, and then she's like, ugh.
I kind of felt like she was just like uncomfortably saying that, but I completely understand your interpretation as well. She hides the photo in her jacket, asking him Did you show this to anyone? Dave assures her that he did not, and that she can keep the copy for posterity. Oh, he's a giver!
While this is happening, Link has been drawn by the siren song of Radmobile, 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 which is a driving video game. He hurries over, pumps a few quarters into it, and begins playing, and is surprisingly good at simulated driving. Stoney comes over and cheers him on until they hear Robin scream, "Matt, stop!" Link and Stoney rush over to the ice because Matt noticed Dave speaking to Robin and has him in a headlock and is reminding him that Robin is off limits.
Oh, fuck off.
Punctuating every word with a slap to the head. Link tries to run onto the ice to save his friend but can't maneuver on the slippery surface, so instead he calls angrily, "Weez the juice!" Matt sees him, flings Dave across the ice, and confronts Link saying, "I don't know you, I don't like you, and as of now, I'm all over you." He skates over and punches Link right in the face, then stands with his fist raised expectantly. Link takes the hit, and the crowd all look on, wondering if there's going to be a fight, fight, fight. But instead, Link rubs his chin and leaves wordlessly, even though Dave is beside him crying, "Defend yourself! What are you doing?" The three friends leave in a sad huff.
Aw, in a huff. I mean, in a huff.
In a huff. And the whole ordeal has made Robin realize that Matt's a dick. She takes off Matt's class ring and flings it across the ice, telling him that they're through.
Mm.
Outside in the parking lot, Dave is appalled that Link didn't fight back. Stoney explains, "Link is a pacifist, and in his day, all he fought for was food and survival, not to be cool." Dave won't accept this answer and proclaims that Link needs to learn how to defend himself. So they go home, and we get a montage of them playing fighting videos for him and then acting them out. First, it's WWF WrestleMania!
Yeah!
And after watching it, Link easily picks up Dave and spins him around like a helicopter. Then it's Kung Fu, and Link breaks a board over Dave's head instead of his own. Then they have him drink a glass full of raw eggs like Rocky, and Link takes this with the side of eggshell and crunches a whole egg in his mouth.
Mm-mm.
And after a night of self-defense 101, the guys know that Link is strong. But is he a fighter? That's yet to be seen.
Ooh. The next day at school, Link has gained quite a bit of notoriety from taking that wallop of a hit that Matt gave him. We get another montage. The 90s were montage of losers. He does a backflip down the hall. Might be his preferred way of getting around. We don't know. It's a montage. He makes a digital prehistoric paintings in his computer class that impresses his classmates. So his computer skills are better than my dad's. Great. He excels in pottery class, kinda, but is not above playfully flinging clay at his classmates. He also greets everyone enthusiastically, whether they be a homeboy, Betty, or geek. He gains quite a following, and everything goes smoothly until the day of the class trip to the La Brea Tar Pits, which Tamara will explain because I have never been except to look at it kind of from the outside, and I've never really been interested. But Tamara has been. I know this for sure.
You're not interested in the La Brea Tar Pits? What?
Absolutely not.
It's a museum that's smack dab in the middle of L.A. next to the LACMA, and it's was many, many, many years ago, and still is to this day, a bubbling cesspool of tar pits.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the existing tar pits are partitioned off, but you can still walk around and see the ooze bubbling up from the ground. And they still have like hundreds of scientists that work at that location, excavating to this day thousands upon thousands of bones and prehistoric artifacts, because over the years, these tar pits that were there, there was a layer of water that sat above the tar pits, so the animals would come to the water to drink, they would get caught in the tar, they would sink to the bottom, preserve forever, and sometimes when animals went and got caught, other predators would come and attack those animals, also getting caught. So it's just like one big tarry bowl of bones that they're still excavating to this day. And you can go into the museum and you can see all of the stuff that they pulled out and all of the scientists that are currently like cleaning off the bones, preserving them, and documenting them. So it's really cool. because it is an existing excavation site that's still in use, and you can see it in action, and you can see the actual tar pits where the animals lost their life.
And that's also where Tamara got to see the evidence of the Olympics in caveman time.
Oh, no, no, no. That actually wasn't there, Corinne.
What?
I think I told this story a long time ago in this podcast, like when we first started, but Dan and I were apartment shopping and we saw an apartment that was in Koreatown, which is probably about a mile and a half from the La Brea tar pits. Uh-huh. And they had an underground garage. And when the lady was giving us the grand tour, she's like, da 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 da, and this is the garage. And there was like about a third of it that was roped off with caution tape. And I was like, oh, are you guys doing construction? What's going on over there? She goes, oh, no, just every so often, like we're so close to the La Brea tar pits that sometimes tar will come up through the grids. And so we just have to wait for it to subside. So don't park there because you'll get tar all over your car. And, da, da, da. And I was like, oh, fuck right off with that. Needless, you have your apartment on the tar pits that aren't even remotely close to here and tar bubbles up and you just are okay with that? Okay.
You're like, I have been to the museum. I saw that, like, first this animal would get in there and then that animal would get in there and then they'd be sinking stunk. And she's, you're like, I do not need to do that in your fucking garage. Thank you very much.
Not today, Satan. Like, oh, my Honda Fit stuck. Somebody come get me. Somebody come get me. My Honda Fit stuck.
You made it actually sound interesting and like a place I might want to go, even though my heart tells me that I don't.
And it's also a beautiful park setting. In addition to the tar bubbling up, you're like, oh, there's a nice grassy area to have lunch at.
It smells like tar. What the appeal to me is it's right next door to LACMA, and I want to go to LACMA. But then I wouldn't see the evidence of the Olympics.
Right. And yes. You're going to have to show me where those are because I haven't seen them. And obviously you have, even though you've never been there. So
secrets. Stoney and Dave file out of the bus with the rest of the class and they go straight to the Cro-Magnon exhibit. There's a full-sized still life of a caveman dwelling that looks eerily like the one Link was in. There's petroglyphs of the Olympics on the side of it.
Shut up. Stop it.
The class moves on to the next exhibit, but Link is transfixed on this one because of the cartwheels that are happening on the walls. He breaks from the group and wanders around the museum, passing by large skeletal animals, and begins making the connection. He freaks out, but Dave and Stoney don't realize he's gone until they're at the stuffed saber-toothed tiger exhibit. The history teacher is informing the group, cavemen could be standing amongst us, and you wouldn't know it. And these two cats probably made more than one caveman their victim. A far scream is heard in the distance. Ah! And the teacher adds, there's one now. But Stoney and Dave finally realize Link is gone. That scream was him, and they rush off to find their friend. They discover him sobbing quietly and trying to start a fire in the Cro-Magnon exhibit. Dave is irritated and approaches to pull him out, but Stoney stops him and informs his friend. He knows Dave. He knows. Dave realizes this is true, and the two slowly approach their friend. And if you had told me that there would be a touching moment in the fucking movie Encino Man, I would have told you to fuck right off. Stop fucking with me. Fuckity fuck, fuck, fuck. However, this moment is genuinely touching. At first, Link pushes away from them, but they stay and try to convey to him that they're his family now, and they're gonna take care of him. He seems to understand sentiment, and the three crouch around the faux cave dwelling, arm in arm, until Link's tears subside.
The next day, Link seems to have made a full recovery and is at school per usual. And what's the best remedy for getting over being encased in ice for thousands of years and then realizing it? Why, driving a car, of course.
This is where the movie jumps the fucking shark.
Yes, this is where it goes from, I guess that could happen, to, all right, now we're just getting in La La Land, literally and figuratively. Link somehow gets in line to a driver's ed class. Stoney and Dave see him from their own class window and freak out because Link is going to use that student driver car as his own Radmobile. They race outside and coincidentally, Robin's taking the same class and just so happens to be in the back seat when Link zooms off, sans the instructor. Dave and Stoney manage to jump into the back and passenger seat of the car right before Link jumps a curve, sending the vehicle onto two wheels. And he continually drives this way on two wheels in a perfect line for like 5 minutes.
I can't.
Past a cheering line of classmates. Really?
I can't. Yeah. Like, the movie had me until this point, and then it suddenly becomes somewhat of a dumpster fire, and I'm like, what the fuckity fuck is going on here? People got lazy towards the end of the movie. Yeah, I know. Yes.
Oh, and the fucks keep coming. Anywho, eventually they plonk back down onto four wheels and drive off school campus because we next see Link swerving into a parking spot on the rougher side of town. He hears music coming from a nearby bar and rushes over, leaving his friends in the car. Stoney tries following him. Robin calls after him, Link, I think you failed your driving test. And Dave kicks the tires because their previous antics have caused a flat. Inside the bar, Link waves his hands in the air like he just don't care. Ooh. Stoney saddles up to the bar and gets cozy with the few rough-looking homies who are half in the bag and insists Stoney take a shot or four of tequila with them. He does, takes a shot, loosens up, and tells the group his alter ego is the Weasel. And as he takes shot after shot, his new friends start chanting, Weasel! 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 We like chanting in this podcast.
Yes.
He's feeling pretty stony by the time Robin and Dave find him. They ask where Link is, and he points him out on the dance floor where he is happily bouncing up and down. Robin is thrilled and tries to pull Dave to go on the dance floor with her, but he declines, saying, I don't like dancing. So she calls him up tight and leaves to dance alone, alone, alone. And also, just a little side note, this bar is hopping. And if we are led to believe that school acts similarly in 1992 as it does today, it's probably about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon because they hadn't gotten out of school yet. And this bar is full of a myriad of drunk people dancing. And it's a cornucopia. Like, there's Mexican people, there's black people, there's white people, there's old people, there's young people. And it doesn't make any sense to me because I'm like, are they giving away free alcohol? Why is this place so full?
Well, and it also makes no sense to me because it's like, okay, so there's Rastafaris and gang members just chilling in the same club.
And that's why I'm like, why is this club? Why?
I didn't understand it at all. It was like they went to Central Casting and there was another movie that was shooting a larger scene that had like a diverse population of people. And these were like the leftovers that didn't get picked up. It just didn't make any sense whatsoever.
It would have been so much better if they made it like an underage drinking bar, like those places that you'd find where you're like, oh, you can go here and they don't card you, because that would probably fully be packed on a school day afternoon with a bunch of seniors that cut class and went off to get drunk.
Yeah. Like, a lot of LA is kind of segregated into different.
No, it is.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, No, this club would not happen. And they're playing, move your body to the groove, move your body. So it's like, you can't even tell what genre the club's supposed to be based on the music.
I think this bar is having a midlife crisis and it just doesn't know what or who it should be. Also, like, up until this point, this movie has been whiter than white, yo, basically, with the exception of one person. And I'm like, what possessed them to do this scene? It was so cringy and backwards.
Because they left Encino, Corinne. They're on the outskirts of Encino, which is shady as hell. And apparently really diverse. And everybody converges into this miraculous little club that's open to all.
So once Stoney and Dave are alone at the bar, they're approached by Enrique, one of Stoney's new friends / drinking partners. He points out a fine mujer sitting by the bar looking sexy. And just like when Ramon in Romeo and Michelle had his sexy Latin accent, these guys are totally like evatos. It's just bad. It's just really bad. The guy says, "You see that woman over there?" They ogle her appreciatively, and he snaps at Dave, "Don't look at her. If I see any man looking at her, he will cease to be recognizable as a man." The friends nervously divert their eyes, but Link didn't get the memo. Moments later, he literally sweeps Enrique's girlfriend off her feet.
We don't see what happens, though, because he, like, grabs her and then disappears. And then you're like, uh-oh. But then there's nothing. The next scene, he's dancing with Robin in a conga line. And yeah. I'm like, I don't know how to explain that. It's just like, she was there, she was gone. And now they're dancing on a conga line with maracas and bongos. And, ah, okay.
The woman who got swept off her feet, she is behind him. She wraps her arms around Link.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So she wraps her arms around Link, like, from behind, because a part of the conga line. And Link has the bongos, of course, and Robin has the maracas, and it's a smorgasbord of wrong. And I do want it to be right. I don't want it to be wrong. So once Link makes it halfway around the room, he's confronted by Enrique, who yells in Spanish, "I said any man who looks at my lady will be dead."
I was hoping you'd do it in Spanish.
You know, I was not happy with the subtitles that I was given, so I didn't. But I do have Spanish coming your way. Don't you fear. Link looks at him blankly and responds in the only Spanish he knows, which he learned the day before in Spanish class. El queso es viejo y podrido. ¿Dónde está el sanitario? The cheese is old and moldy. Where is the bathroom? Oh, and that word that you were using before is the word for moldy that I saw in Google Translate, but the word they used was podrido, which is the word for rotting.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am definitely not going to remember that. Thanks for the Spanish lesson.
I didn't remember it either. This causes Enrique and his friends to erupt with laughter before he tells Link, "You're right, ese. She is not worth it," prompting his mujer to slap Enrique and leave in a huff.
In a huff!
Enrique cries like a baby, and his Enrique llorando como un bebé, y el amigos hug him and console him like good vatos do. But the fun is short-lived because police officers kick open the front door and the bartender yells, "Policia! Immigración!" And everyone starts fleeing. Dave pushes Stoney and Robin together and tells them to run while he tries to find Link. He then spots his prehistoric friend taking a ride on the ceiling fan. And that's not like the bed dance. Actually, he is holding onto a ceiling fan and spinning around. He attempts to pull him down, yelling, "Hurry up or we'll get caught," only to turn around and smack right into the police officer who informs him, "You're busted." But not for immigration violations. This was not La Migra who was here. This is just the regular police, and it's probably for stealing the car from the school. Cut to Dave and Link getting booked into jail. Dave is down in the dumps as they get fingerprinted, but Link's having a grand old time, posing happily for the mugshot with his bestie after smacking his friend with his inked-up hands. So Dave's first stint in jail is documented by a headshot with an inky hand mark across his cheek. And we ask, where are Dave's parents?
Good question, Corinne.
Nowhere.
Another thing, too, is like, the police storming into that bar also was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because the bartender was like, "Policia, immigration." And then everybody literally leaves the bar. Like, every single person in the bar runs out of it. So it's completely empty except for Dave and Link. Why? I am sure all those people weren't illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that this was the drug bar. I think this is the bar where you can buy drugs, and the whole bar part is just a front. So it is a known drug dealing establishment, hence all the diverse people, although I don't think they would take drugs and hang out and dance. I think they would just get their drugs and leave.
Yeah, well, I think that you're onto something with drugs, but I think you need to pair that with the words riders, using drugs. This is the part of the script where the people who were writing the movie had just done a few too many drugs and were just like, okay, you know what we should do next? How about if there was like a driver's ed car, even though Cavey isn't enrolled in driver's ed class, but the driver's ed teacher calls him by name, and then he goes on a wild car ride because he likes to, you know, play the video game. And then they go to this bar with all these people that are dancing in the middle of the afternoon. And there's like gangbangers there, but there's also like Rastafari and, you know, there's a conga line. What about that? How does that sound?
Terrible.
I'd like some more cocaine. I just need to crank out the rest of the script real quick.
I think that Paul Shore probably had some choice jokes that he really wanted to plant in the movie. And since he was kind of big at the time, he probably had a little bit of say-so in the creative writing. I think that they were trying to build some of these scenes around him and his Pauly Shore-ness. Meanwhile, Robin and Stoney have caught a ride out of the police raid with Enrique and his homies. They're cruising in a lowrider, and Stoney is teaching them how to speak like a weasel. He has them all repeat simultaneously, Stoney's the crustiest vato I've ever witnessed. So don't harsh his gig, buddy. So I think that's what they wanted to do. They wanted him to be leading a bunch of vatos in a lowrider in a chant on how to be a better weasel. There's probably better ways to do that.
Yeah, but that was the one part of the scene that I was like, okay, I could see that happening.
Yeah. Yeah, but how to get there, Corinne? That's the question. How do you get him there?
I could think of a bevy of different ways.
A bevy of better ways, perhaps.
Yes.
Robin gets dropped off at home first, only to discover Matt waiting on her steps. He questions the element she's hanging out with, and she tells him rightfully to go home.
Yeah.
Little does she know that Matt got a suspicious feeling, a.k.a. jealousy, about Link and did some digging earlier in the day. Matt and his lackeys snuck into the school office and stole Link's file, which didn't have anything in it except some medical records from a vet's office, causing Matt to wonder aloud, what are these two losers hiding? And this also was a bevy of banner writing because Matt is a footnote in the outskirts of most of the scenes, only to come in and be a stupid shithead bully. But towards the end, like the last 10 minutes of the movie, he's really invested in trying to figure out who Link is and what his deal is. And we see it like peppered within these scenes. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, what? Oh, wait, Matt's in here now? And okay, so now he's all right. Okay, Matt's rolling into the wonderful banner writing that we're going over right now.
Yeah, suddenly he turns into like Scooby and the gang trying to solve the mystery.
Yes. So Matt was trying to solve mysteries, found this vet record in Link's file at school, and steals it. Okay, file that away for later. Great. But back at Robin's door, Matt asks what time he should pick her up tomorrow for prom, and she tells him to buzz off because she doesn't want to go with him. She wants to go with someone who's really cool, who's not afraid to be himself, and then closes the door in his face.
And may I suggest Stoney?
You may, Corinne, you may.
He's really cool, and he's not afraid to be himself.
Meanwhile, in jail, Dave uses his only phone call to call Robin and ask her out to prom. Perhaps one of the very first promposals, because he did something extreme to prove that he really wanted to go with her.
I know.
But she says no.
He's like, Robin, I'm in jail and I'm using my one phone call on you because I just really wanted to ask you, would you go to the prom with me? And I'm like, you dumb fuck.
And she says no on top of it. She asks Dave to ask Link if he'll go with her. Dave loses his shit a little bit, and she apologizes and offers that they can all go together, but he just hangs up on her. We don't see how the boys get bailed out of jail, but we do see the next day. Link and Dave have somehow safely made it home, but not for long. First thing in the morning, Dave gathers up Link in the car with all his stuff. Stoney arrives on his scooter and intercepts the two on the street, yelling good-naturedly, ¿Dónde está ustedes? How is jail? But Dave ignores him and races off, which isn't like him.
Oh, in a truly sulky Anakin Skywalker move, Dave takes Link to an orchard in the middle of nowhere, apologizes to him. Sorry, buddy, things just didn't work out right. I don't want to cut you up into little pieces or anything, which he does literally say. And then I added, like I did to Jimmy Mahoney from the Cub Scouts, this is the best thing for both of us. And he gives them a handful of quarters for the Radmobile car racing game. Because what do you need when you get dropped off in the middle of the countryside next to an orchard on the you need quarters for a video game that's nowhere near you. Good.
Radmobile.
Yeah.
Radmobile.
Thank you, Radmobile. Yes. Because, let's be honest, Dave just, he doesn't want to take care of him anymore. It's just not working out. Has he gotten more popular? No. Has he gotten the girl? No. Who's gotten more popular? This guy. Who's gotten the girl? This guy, Kavy. But no. Has Dave benefited from this? Tam, I ask you that. Huh? Has Dave benefited from this?
He probably could have, but he's a big douche. So, currently, no.
I would say, though, that Stoney has had a great time with him, and and Dave should have embraced that.
Yep.
Tamara says that Dave doesn't want to take care of Kavy anymore. I say he's being a sulky ass little incel because his crush wants to go on a date with Kavy. But, you know, that's just me.
I just said that that's what Dave is playing off to Link. Like, I can't take care of you anymore.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He's not being like, you got my girlfriend, bitch, get the fuck out. He's saying, I can't take care of you anymore.
I love how he's so possessive of this person that, A, sounds like she might have been interested in him and he shut her the shit down because she wasn't cute then. And then he actually literally calls her his girlfriend. Ew. When, no, they're not together, motherfucker. Stoney, who saw the duo driving off, eventually catches up with the pair and tells Dave how shitty he's been and how he was fine mooching off Link's vibe when he thought he could get something out of it. But now that he thinks Link's crusty and he's dropping him like a hot potato, Dave doesn't care until Stoney adds, maybe Matt was right about you. Maybe you are a loser. This causes Dave to attack Stoney, and the two tussle until Link pulls them apart and grunts, family! The fighting has caused Link to get teary-eyed, and he holds the two in a bear hug until the friends calm down and apologize to each other. And Dave does not deserve the pure heart that is Link or Stoney.
See, this too, like this whole section, when he was like getting all emotional and he had him, he's like, family!
Yeah.
And he was like, holding on to him, and they were
really
like,
sweet.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry too. And he's like, you guys got to make up. Like that whole, you can't write that properly in an outline. I was just like, this is the wrong movie to do. Cause he just, Brendan Fraser's bringing it. And I'm just like, he hugs him in the bear hug and then they make up.
Well, Kavy and Stoney deserve each other, and Dave doesn't deserve either of them, little sulky ass Anakin Skywalker. But Kavy doesn't understand. He just loves everyone. He is the Labrador Retriever of this movie.
Labrador / toddler.
Yes. But like toddler just effused with love, not effused with tantrums.
Yes. A toddler that wants snacks and naps and to make prehistoric cave paintings in poo. With a good heart.
And also go, honka, honka, to a pair of gazongas.
Gazongas.
So he holds the two in a sweet bear hug until the friends calm down and apologize to each other. This must have been the wake-up call Dave needed, because he starts acting less like a self-centered asshat. The friends return to the Morgan house, and Dave helps Link get ready for prom. Link is wearing a paisley blazer and vest over his t-shirt and a pair of plaid board shorts, and his sideshow bob do has been contained to a ponytail and hairsprayed into like a little helmet. And, you know, they were still
like... Pompadourious helmet.
Yeah. Pompadourious. Ooh, I love that. Yes, a Pompadourious helmet. And of course, he's dressed in layers on layers on layers on layers, as one is wont to do at that point in time.
Needs more shoulder pad.
Yes, he definitely needs more shoulder pad. I'm surprised that Robin didn't like see him and be like, you're not wearing a shoulder pad. I'm sorry. I gotta go.
Mm-hmm.
Robin comes to the door to pick them up and is surprised to see that Dave's not ready. He explains that he's not going. And when she insists, he adds, oh, I'm on probation and grounded.
Yeah, part of me was like, okay, maybe he was being selfless and is like, Link, you can go with Robin. I'm going to, you know, relent and you can have fun with her. Or where his parents are like, you're not going anywhere, motherfucker. You think you're going to prom? Yeah, you got arrested. Your ass is grounded. And so he's acting all benevolent, but in actuality, he can't go.
I don't think he's being benevolent at all. I think he doesn't want to see Link with Robin. And so he's not going because he's realized the right thing to do, but he still feels sulky around it, which is understandable. Like, you know, you can have like emotion, feelings of jealousy, and that's okay. There's a difference between feeling like a bitter bitch and seeing your friend go off to the prom with someone that you like versus trying to dump them off into the middle of the countryside by themselves.
True and fair, but any normal parent in any normal circumstances would be like, I just bailed you out of jail. You're fucking grounded. But in Dave's world, that doesn't happen.
Yes, but his parents have just disappeared. Perhaps I am also right about the whole serial killer thing, and he's killed off his parents and cut them into little pieces, maybe buried them under a layer of pool dirt. I don't know. Just hypothesizing.
Got it.
I kind of don't think that it's true that he's grounded. I do think any parent in their right mind would ground him.
See, that's where I just like hypothesized. So yeah. Oh, so we're just going to gloss over that, too. He got out of jail somehow. His parents aren't there, but he's still, like, totally fine. And, okay, continue. Carry on. I'm sorry I questioned you.
Because Stoney and Dave wouldn't be hanging out in the backyard drinking champagne. I don't think his parents would be like, oh, you can't go to the prom, but you know what you can do? You can hang out in the backyard with your best friend and drink alcohol together. Like, I don't think, yeah. Anywho. Link and Robin go to the prom alone while Stoney and Dave hang out in the backyard poolside drinking champagne. Somehow, in the midst of all of this, the pool has been filled up with water, but we use the term pool loosely. Since there's no lining, he did not consult with Tamara as he should have, and it's just a hole in the motherfucking ground. The water is murky and brown as the river Isa was floating down. And Aguas Calientes in the movie Fools Rush In.
That we did a few weeks ago.
Yes. And boy, howdy. I'm like, how they got water to stay in. Anyways, Stoney and Dave cheers to new beginnings and hope Link is having a good time.
But little do the friends know that Matt is up to his devious antics again that just started 5 minutes prior in this movie, inexplicably. Matt has shown up at Dave and Link's house, thinking the two are at prom, and he sneaks into Dave's room, knocking over a framed photo of Robin in the process. He finds that underneath the frame and the picture, there's a chronological collection of snapshots showing the glacier that encased Link and it melting, ending with the very last snapshot that the friends took after they gave Link his makeover. Matt says, gotcha, and takes the evidence with him. Okay, Matt. On his way out, Matt startles Dave's bratty sis and she hollers. Dave and Stoney rush outside just in time to see Matt leave with the photos in his hand. They demand that he give them back, but Matt has other ideas. He drives straight to the prom and enters the auditorium just as they're crowning the prom queen and king. Robin is, of course, named queen, and Link is about to be named king, but Matt yells, "Wait! Wait!" And the whole auditorium quiets as he makes his way to the stage. He pushes Link out of the way and grabs the mic, asking his classmates, if someone's doing something bogus in our school, we have the right to know, right?
Right.
The prom crowd responds with murmurs of, right?
Right.
Right. Back at him. Matt tells the students, Link is not who he pretends to be. And he has everyone's rapt attention as he says matter-of-factly, he's a caveman. There's a moment of silence before the crowd erupts into thunderous applause. Matt tries to regain control, calling out, no, no, I have proof. He produces the photos from his jacket and waves them around, but no one is paying attention to him until Dave arrives, jumps onto stage, and attempts to snatch the photos from Matt's hand.
Matt socks Dave in the face and everyone stops cheering. Link, now prepped with his fighting know-how, jumps on the stage and bows karate style to Dave before headbutting him. Then he flings Matt over his shoulder and spins him around WWF style and tosses Matt onto a huge sheet cake.
Ruining a perfectly good cake. Thank you very much.
I know. But, you know, they had to have the food representation in the prom as they normally do. Like, there's got to be a prom. There's got to be food somewhere. So since they didn't have people walking around eating snacks and drinks, they just had a large sheet cake that Matt landed on. Well done. Meanwhile, Robin has retrieved the stack of photos Matt dropped on stage and looks at them. Oh! And now she knows the truth about her date. Oh!
Ooh. One, the person who was crowning the king and queen of the prom also is the head of the computer club, is... And I'm not pronouncing his name correctly, but Ki-Wi Kwan, who was in Goonies, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And this is one of the last movies that he did before he retired from acting because he was getting shit roles. Because just think about how much better this movie would have been if he had played Dave.
I don't think so. I don't think Ki would be a good Dave because Dave's a douche.
I think they would have improved the role a little bit for him. I'm just saying.
I don't know. Look what they did to him now.
He's a great actor, and I loved seeing him in Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I'm glad he's back on the scene, the acting scene. But the fight at the prom seems to set the prom party off, and Link begins boogieing to a song called Monkey.
I'm not sure if it was called Monkey, but it was about monkeys.
Yeah,
about it's called The Monkey.
I think it's really about penises that they were using monkey as a euphemism for. But yes, I agree. There was the word monkey was used a lot. And Link busts some pretty sweet moves. And then suddenly there's a choreographed routine. And I didn't say this previously, but I'm going to say it now because I forgot to earlier. And it works in this context. Back at the bar where all that fucked up shit was happening, and Robin, his crush, asks him to dance, and he says, I don't dance. Dude, the girl that you have a huge crush on, the guy that you have a huge crush on, whatever, asks you to fucking dance? What are you gonna do? You're gonna fucking dance. Yeah, you are. You're gonna take the in, and you're gonna try and work it as much as you can. Even if it's just being like, I don't really know how to dance, but maybe you can show me a move or two. You know, whatever.
Yes. Yes.
So, suddenly though, Dave is hit by the dancing spirit. And Tam writes, and I love this. He says, and he does the douchiest thing and tells Robin, watch this, before jumping into the routine with his friends. He's like, I would dance with you back at the bar, except no. I just danced with my friends at the prom that I decided not to go to with you.
So Link starts dancing and then Stoney joins him. This is the funny part where I'm like, this is Dave's a tertiary character for sure, because Link goes to Stoney and Stoney's like, oh, and Link's like, oh, and then they like go in the dance on the floor together. And then the classmates around them start vibing and dancing like them. And then Dave, who's been forgotten by the wayside, goes, Robin, watch this. Nobody gives a fuck if you're dancing, Dave. Nobody cares if you're in the routine. Like, they all realize what a douchebag you are. So the fact that you just saddled up and started dancing with them, of course you want to be part of the cool crowd now, you fucker.
Seriously.
That's why I thought he was the douchiest thing. He's all, Robin, watch what I can do. Okay, bitch, you didn't want to dance with me at the bar, but now you're dancing over here with your friends. Fuck yeah.
For real. They are the bells of the ball, so of course the whole prom follows Dave, Stoney, and Link back to Dave's house for the after party. There's a raucous group of high schoolers happily splashing around in the brown pool water. Oh, that must have been so fun for those extras, because that water looked nasty.
Can you even imagine, like, and when you try to get out of the pool, you're basically just crawling on muddy ground, so all of their prom gear is going to get totally ruined. If they can even get out of the pool, because if that ground saturates, like, they'll probably just try to get out and it'll just crumble in their hands and they'll drown.
It's going to be like a fucking La Brea Tar Pit situation all over again.
That was Dave's fucking point. He is trying to recreate the La Brea Tar Pits in his backyard. He is a serial killer, that son of a bitch.
So Robin and Dave sit super close on the lounge chair because suddenly Robin thinks Dave is, I don't understand how this happened. Yeah. There is nothing that happened. There's nothing that happened. Like, he didn't. It wasn't him that stood up to the fucking her ex-boyfriend who was an asshole. It was fucking Link. Like, it doesn't make any kind of sense. And even, like, fucking Stoney was better than Dave was because Stoney poured a cup of punch over the bully ex-boyfriend's head while he laid on the cake. And Dave was, like, just standing back, twiddling his thumbs, being like, oh, look at you people being active in your lives. I'm just going to stand here, yo.
But see, Robin saw the pictures of Link and she doesn't want any of that prehistoric penis. So she's got to go for the alternate since it's not Matt. And, you know, Dave's got some sweet, sweet dance moves and a bodyguard. Then he's looking way more appealing to her, apparently.
Okay.
Oh, and a sick, sick pool that she can swim in all summer long. Yay. She'll probably come out as brown as Link did when he first showed up in the movie, all full of clay and practical prehistoric brown face.
Oh my gosh. Robin looks around at the pool party and tells Dave, pretty cool, because I guess the pool has worked its magic. I think that's the whole thing. The mud pit, a.k.a. pool, has seduced Robin into... Yes.
Yeah.
So if you build it, it will come, apparently, does work for Dave. Why does it work for Dave? I don't know. Anyways, he nods in agreement and says, there's something else cool I want to show you. Down in my pants. And he kisses her, and it's an awkward one. He doesn't say down in his pants, but I couldn't help myself.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah. Tamara's like eyes were boring a hole into me.
Did not say that. If he did say that and she's still kissing him, I think completely different of you, Robin.
Yeah, well, I think saying there's something cool I want to show you and then kissing is not what you want to show a person. It's just like, anyways. Mm.
I forgot. If you don't recall, Corinne, I said this earlier that Dave is a douche. yeah.
You're kinder to him than I am because I have called him a serial killer and an incel multiple times. So,
but you're not wrong.
So they kiss for mysterious reasons, apparently, because Robin is turned on by the mud pit. And the kiss is an awkward one. So, yeah, Tamara and I are not like, and it's a good one. No, it's not. It's an awkward one that we could have gotten the whole movie without seeing. Thank you very much. Link is behind them, sneaking a peek at the two and smiles in approval before dancing off. Stoney joins him and the pair boogie until they see a curious silhouette on the sliding glass door. Because previously there was a foreshadowed another little earthquake that happened.
Oh, yeah. Completely forgot to put that in there. While they left to go chase after Matt and his lackeys, the ground shook and their champagne glasses vibrated in the backyard.
Which is obviously the foreshadowing of things to come. Vibrating champagne glasses. So it looks eerily similar to Lynx when he was trying to figure out glass, but this one has boobs or gazongas or cones. Link and Stoney scream at each other. And rush inside. There's a familiar cave painting on the wall and the fire alarm goes off. Is this deja vu? No. The friends rush upstairs to find a muddy female instead of male soaking in a tub. She screams when she sees them. I'm surprised that she was able to figure out how to work a bathtub, but hey, whatever.
Oh my God. You and me both, sister. I'm like, oh, so she decided there's a tub. Water comes out of the tub. And there's bubbles in the tub, so she figured out the soap as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
She screams when she sees them, and Link screams back, and they rush over and he jumps into the tub with her. The two hug, and Stoney understands and says, it's your cave nug. We cut to the cave nug, sans the dirt. She's got a super stony makeover. Apparently, okay, a mystery throughout this entire movie, how the tiny people that are Sean Astin and Pauly Shore were able to give Brendan Fraser appropriately sized clothes, question mark. But then we get to the even bigger question mark of this very petite young woman getting like a super cute bra and shorts outfit that I know she didn't get from the middle school aged sister, nor from the older mom.
But she's there and she's looking gorgeous in her hot little getup.
Okay. I figured it out. Here's how that outfit came to be. I can't explain Link's outfit.
Right.
I can explain hers. You see, Dave, he has a hard on for Robin. I don't know if you noticed that or not. And
right. Okay. Sure. Gotcha.
And so in his room, he has a Robin. He has a pillow that has a cute little pair of short shorts and a cute little bra wrapped around the middle. And he cuddles it.
Oh, let's just stop right there. I don't think I want to hear how this goes. I think I got it. Okay, no more needs to be said. He stole Robin's clothes for his Robin doll pillow. And now that, you know, he's got that real thing and has a cave nug that needs some crusty gear.
Yeah.
He gave it to her. Okay.
So,
oh, Lord.
Yes.
This movie makes you do all kinds of mental acrobats to follow along with it. I realize that now.
So, Linkette is quite the Betty underneath. Stoney and Link applaud her hotness. She must have gotten the clothes from Dave's sister. That's what Dave says, because she's wearing tiny shorts and a tiny crop top. Lincoln and his recently thawed beau hug, and they live happily ever after. The end. Terrible.
Oh,
how many dry kisses do you give this movie?
I'm not even going to go over the dry kiss rating. Please see it in a different episode because we're running long on time.
Yes.
And I'm going to give it 1.5 dry kisses, Corinne. And if you don't know why, please go back and listen to the many, many comments I made throughout this outline. And I'm sure you could figure it out. Brendan Fraser was the charming glue that held this movie together, which I could not properly convey in words. But he was a toddler / puppy dog that was just inexplicable. Stoney was charming and probably the best part of this movie. And Dave was an asshole who was also the main character. So all of that put together with some really shitty writing and some lazy jumps in the storyline.
And racism.
And racism. Thank you. We're going to get to it when we go to the Musketeers of Diversity. Yes. Because, yeah. I would say watch it once just to talk shit, as usually my recommendation, and then never see it again. And I am the proud owner of Encino Man now, because I had to purchase it for $17.99 off of Prime because I could not do the outline in 48 hours. So yay me. Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give Encino Man?
I own Adam's Rib, so yeah. I rate it higher than you do. For the first half of this movie, I was pleasantly surprised. And then the second half of this movie, I wasn't surprised at all. So I give it a 2.75 dry kisses.
Wow.
Yes.
That is way better. And it was my movie.
If there wasn't the racism, it would get a higher rating, definitely. And if there had just been one kind of bad moment, like, oh, I'm going to do the stupid car driving moment, and then it kind of got itself together afterwards, it also would have been rated higher, but like it jumped the shark once they got to the
went
driving.
Off the rails and stayed off the rails.
Sweet Jesus. It went onto two wheels on a car, and when you know you shouldn't drive on two wheels in a car, and then that was where it stayed. Yes. Now we move on to the Four Musketeers of Diversity, unless you have anything you would like to say in response.
I said enough.
Great. Okay, Four Musketeers of Diversity. How many musketeers are showing up to the table?
Zero. You can't even say racial diversity because everybody was a stereotype. Mm-mm-mm-mm. Asian kid was the smart computer nerd. The vatos were the drunk ones talking about their mujeres in the bar.
Yeah, we got zero. Let's move on. Spin the bottle. Okay, I got one.
Yay.
Gentle listeners, I have created this one especially for this movie, Encino Man.
Spin bottle grab bag question, a la Corinne.
Who would you date from this movie?
Oh, shit. Easily Stoney. Easily. Easily. I don't like a man who's smaller than me and he's quite petite, but I do love a character and I do love somebody who's fully in themselves. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, like, especially now, and I'm probably going to go down a rabbit hole when I'm not trying to do an outline and get it to you in a reasonable amount of time before we record, to find out what happened to Pauly Shore's, like, life after he lost his fame and popularity.
Oh yeah, and also there's been hubbub about him playing Richard Simmons in a Richard Simmons biopic, which I think would be an amazing choice.
Oh, I'd be interested in seeing that for sure.
And
Dave, Corinne, I totally would date Dave. He's so dreamy.
Dave is like, it's like, oh, do you want to date Dave or do you want to date the asshole ex-boyfriend of Robin? I'm kind of feeling more towards the asshole ex-boyfriend of Robin. Thank you for asking.
There's no good choices.
There are two people who I would genuinely be interested in dating in this movie. Uh-huh. Now, one is with a caveat. The other is not.
Okay.
First guy is the guy who was the head of the computer club, Ki Wee Kwan, who was also putting crowns onto people's head for king and queen. He had two very brief portions, but he was not speaking in any kind of weird broken English. Let's point that out. He did not have a large enough role to be counted under the Musketeers of Diversity, and there was enough bad misrepresentation that regardless, he wouldn't be. However, he had a really nice solid vibe. I liked him. Second would definitely be Stoney, and that is because I really liked the person he presented himself as. However, I did not see him while he was just like busy toking away in any area at all, even though Dave refers to him loving nugs so I wouldn't be able to handle him with his smoking. But as he is represented in this movie, I would totally date him. I think he's awesome. I think he's a super rad guy.
I have a caveat, too. I would date, back in the day, Brendan Fraser. Not Link per se, but Brendan Fraser in his heyday, like when he was in The Mummy, like the shitty superhero he plays, and then this adorable little caveman.
Yeah.
That should have ripped Dave's arms off. I would date Brendan Fraser, but in the movie, I would date Stoney.
Yeah, I think that Brendan Fraser did a fantastic job in this movie. He outclassed it. I thought that Pauly Shore had the best scripted role in the entire movie.
Yeah.
And kudos. He had great lines. Loved it. I thought I was going to fucking hate him, and I didn't.
The only thing I have to say is that when Dave takes Link out to the countryside to release him into the wild.
Yes.
And Stoney finds him. Like, you could tell that Pauly Shore is like, oh, this is my time to be dramatic. No, Dave, that's not how you treat friends. You were all up in his thing. And he was like trying to be serious and I just couldn't take him seriously. I was like, he was trying to like play the dramatic actor and have this really deep scene that just did not resonate because he's Pauly Shore and he's talking like Pauly Shore. And it was just, that was the one downside of this movie with Pauly Shore.
But when he and Dave saw Brendan Fraser at the little cave reenactment area crying, Pauly Shore approaches him and he says, family. We're family. And it's actually really sweet and touching.
Yeah.
And so I thought Pauly Shore pulled through really well in that moment. And I agree that was the second one was not his strongest acting moment, for sure. For sure, dude.
For sure. For sure, for sure.
So, hey, Tam, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we're doing the 2007 street racing classic Redline, which is what Corinne just told me because I've never heard it before. So I'm repeating after her verbatim.
Oh, Tamara, you are in for a treat.
No, no. You told me what this is about, and I think I'm going to be as thrilled about it as I am about Encino Man, but at least I don't have to buy it.
It's streaming, so you don't even have to rent it.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. An epic story of street racing, kidnapping a hot chick, and an ex-armed forces person rescuing her. Is this love that I'm feeling? Is this the love that I've been car racing for? And yes, there are original car racing songs sung in this movie.
Yay. Can't wait.
And it has Eddie Griffin in it. So, if you have anything you would like to say about the 2007 car street racing classic movie, Redline, Encino Man, or anything else, you can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, X, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
Wah-ha-ha. And as always, if you can rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we greatly appreciate it. And when I say rates, I mean 5 stars, not 1 star, 5 stars.
And like glowing
appreciate
comments.
The 5-star ones.
Like, yeah. Hey, you guys have the wonderfulest voices and you're so funny, I almost peed myself.
Yeah.
And seeing the comments, actually, they make me happy. So, just FYI.
The good ones. I don't think we've gotten any bad ones.
We haven't gotten any bad ones yet.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Hey, Rachel, if you're listening to this podcast, greatly appreciate it. And as always, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Good night.
See you next time.
See you next time. His shovel, his security shovel, his emotional support shovel, who picks up his emotional support shovel and motions as if he's going to attack them.
You not ready for this? Besito. No, no, that's not good. I don't think you're ready for this. Fuck. What rhymes? No. Okay, cut that out, Corinne.
That long distance... what? No. Dang it. I can do this.